Welcome to the Middle East Report, your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. Each week, we connect you to the people, places, and geography in the land of Israel and in the Middle East. And of course, we keep you informed of the current events that are happening in Israel and the Middle East. And I can't think of any one group of people, one organization that does that other than the Israel Guys. A lot of you who are listening right now know the Israel Guys. Some of you don't. You're going to know who they are here by the end of this program here on the Middle East Report. But Ben Hilton is with us today on the Middle East Report. He is one of the Israel Guys, and they have a passion for Israel that runs so deep. And here's what they say. In a world of anti-Israel propaganda and Jew hatred, they believe that you should have a direct connection to the lands and people of Israel. Ben, you are one of the Israel Guys. Thank you for joining us here on the Middle East Report.
Thank you for having me.
And you actually are a part of this incredible organization, which is a part of HaYovel, which is kind of the covering over the organization. So let's start off by having you tell us about you. You spent a lot of time in Israel. You love the Jewish people. We're going to get into the Israel Guys. We're going to talk about current events. This is going to be a jam-packed 28 minutes.
I kind of grew up in this, honestly. I was very, very blessed to come to Israel when I was 13 with my family and stood on the mountains of Israel and saw the Bible unfold in front of me, and obviously changed my life forever. You cannot see that and not be changed by it. And my family started coming to serve and bless and volunteer for the Jewish people on the mountains of Samaria. Judea and Samaria is the biblical heartland of Israel. What most people mistakenly call the West Bank is Judea and Samaria. And so we came many years ago with the specific purpose to bless and serve the Jewish people as Christians, as non-Jews. And that grew into what became known as HaYovel. As the years went on, my brother Luke and I started doing film production, telling the stories of the Jewish people that lived in Judea and Samaria. And that eventually naturally became what we call the Israel Guys today. What it is really is traditional media. I think everyone is on this boat now. Is traditional media has an agenda across the board. And when it comes to the Middle East, a high percentage of the stories that come from Israel are factually incorrect. And as Christians who grew up working in Judea and Samaria, we were seeing what was happening in front of us. We would see a story happen, and then we would see it repeated on CNN or see it repeated on MSNBC. And a lot of what they reported, they got completely wrong. Whether that was unintentional or intentional or a combination of both, you know, there's a lot more to that. But what we saw was so much of this was completely incorrect. And we realized that we had an opportunity to share our version of what we saw just as eyewitnesses. And so we started doing that. And that's become what's known as the Israel Guys today.
You guys have broken that mold. You're not ashamed of telling the truth, because that's what you guys do every single day. You guys have millions of views on YouTube, millions, you know, of subscribers through all of your different platforms. Why do you think there is such a program out there among media and news outlets to just destroy Israel? I mean, that's what it is. And when it all boils down to it,
yeah, there's a lot to it. I mean, you could sit and talk for 4 hours about the depth of, you know, the money laundering and the blackmail and the oil, and there's a lot to it. But I think what it boils down to is anti-Semitism. You know, it's Jew hatred. It's the age old story that's been happening for thousands of years, that the Jewish people are not allowed to succeed and prosper. Throughout history, whenever the Jewish people have come into a country and succeeded, when they prosper, when they flourish, the people around them look at them, the jealousy, whatever that is, the anti-Semitism pops up, and the Jewish people must be subdued, they must be crushed. And we see that repeating pattern happen over and over and over and over again. So post-Holocaust, the Jewish state was created, and Israel is flourishing. Their GDP is much higher than any of the countries around them. They're much more successful. You know, even Arabs, you know, Arabs who live in Israel live a much, much better life than they do in any of the Arab countries around. And at its core, it's a jealousy. You know, it's the age-old anti-Semitic jealousy that you see of Israel is not allowed to succeed. Jewish people are not allowed to flourish. And that just bleeds over into the West. And I think a lot of these huge media companies have just picked directly up on that. Yeah.
You tell the truth of what's going on from this biblical perspective that we don't call it the West Bank. We call it Judea and Samaria. In fact, that's where Ha-Yuvel, which is the covering over the Israel guys, is located. They're located right there in the heartland of Israel, and they've got an entire staff and team that lives in Israel. You've lived in Israel for many, many years. And I want to encourage everybody who's listening today to get with the Israel guys. Get them on YouTube, with all their social media platforms that they have. They're constantly putting out videos. They're constantly giving you news and information that you're not going to hear anywhere else. I mean, that is the truth. So here's how you do it. You just go to theisraelguys.com. TheIsraelGuys.com. You can go there, get on their mailing list. I'm on their mailing list, and I get all this great information that comes out. I highly encourage you to do that. If you're looking for the truth, which I know you are, you're listening here to the Middle East Report, then you need to really connect with the Israel guys. So TheIsraelGuys.com. Ben, there's a lot going on right now, obviously, in Israel. And we look back to October 7 and the tragedy that happened there, the horrific massacre, Jewish people, many others, and then the hostages in Gaza and the demonic hatred from Hamas. It is just absolutely horrific. You know, where are we here in this Gaza war? We've seen the hostages paraded out on a stage. It is disgusting.
It is. It's one of the most... one of the most barbaric forms of evil that we're seeing unfold right in front of us. What honestly has shocked me, we all grew up seeing Holocaust denial, see you know, people around us denying the Holocaust. And the Holocaust was highly documented, very highly documented, and always seemed so absurd to fly in the face of the level of documentation that the Holocaust had. But what we've seen since October 7th, October 8th, the denial started, and there are so many people in America and around the world who do not believe October 7th happened in the way that it did. And it makes me realize how the Holocaust denial actually happened. And for as documented as the Holocaust was, October 7th was documented at an entirely different level. We not only have security camera footage from everywhere, footage from cell phones from Israelis and whatever. We also, Hamas documented everything, you know, body cameras on a lot of the terrorist fighters. They also were taking stills. They brought in reporters that worked for major news networks in America. I believe Associated Press, CNN, some of their reporters were told about October 7th in advance, did not alert anyone, came in with Hamas and documented the atrocities, and then sold the photos and continue, I believe to this day, to collect royalties on those photos sold to Fox, sold to all the other major media networks. And they knew about this in advance. And I just want to say that, like, if you're facing the October 7th denial, like, you know, if there's people that you know, this is one of the most documented events in history. And I know a lot of the footage does not appear on social media anymore because it's way too barbaric, but there are places that can find it. We get this all the time on our channel. People ask us, like, you know, why aren't you showing the footage? You talk about the footage, but you won't show it. We can't. We honestly can't, because YouTube will delete our videos in a heartbeat. And even the non-graphic stuff, like, YouTube will not allow it to go up. But there are places that it can be found. But today, Israel is still very much reeling. October 7th is something that's going to take a very long time, maybe a generation, to recover from, just the trauma and the children, the trauma and the first responders, the trauma and the military, the, you know, soldiers and stuff. Israel has fought a very successful war in Gaza. But what they're up against in Gaza is horrific and very, very, very difficult for any military to tackle. You're talking about Hamas being completely entrenched in civilian life. And the media and national governments both tried to paint a very traditional narrative, a very traditional war narrative of, we have Hamas and we have Gazans. And they try to separate the two. What I've seen and what Israel has seen is there is no separation between the two. Obviously, there probably are Gazans that hate what Hamas do, have done. I'd imagine that there are. But for the most part, if you look at the documented evidence from October 7th, and I have a lot of it, if you look at that documented evidence, when Hamas was committing the atrocities on October 7th, they were surrounded by thousands of Gazans, men, women, and children, beside themselves with joy as they dragged, you know, mutilated bodies to the streets of Gaza. in Shechem and in Jenin, the big cities in Judea and Samaria, not in Gaza, of also Palestinians. When this was happening, there were tens of thousands of Palestinians in the streets handing out candy, laying on their horns. Like, I have footage of all of this. We live up in Har Bracha, and after these attacks happened, also an attack, when Iran attacked later on, there were tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Palestinians in the streets cheering. Like, we could hear it from up on our mountain of just, like, thousands and thousands of people cheering out in the streets. Not only that, but when Hamas came into Israel on October 7th, Hamas terrorists committed a lot of horrific atrocities. But from what I've heard from first responders who were on the ground, for the most part, a lot of the Hamas units, they came in very quick. They were expecting to meet a lot more resistance from Israel than they did. It was a massive intelligence failure on Israel's part. A lot of things went wrong that should not have gone wrong. Multiple security levels failed that should not have failed. But when Hamas came into Israel, they were expecting to, you know, to die at any second. So they moved as fast as they possibly could. They came in, they killed as many people as they could, and they took as many hostages as they could, and they moved. They constantly moved. What followed is when, in some of these communities, soldiers were not able to respond quickly, Gazan civilians followed in the wake of Hamas, and some of the most brutal atrocities that were committed on October 7th were committed by civilians, Gazan civilians. And since October 7th, in the war that Israel has been fighting in Gaza, it's been a constant continuation of that. Basically, Hamas and Gazan civilians operate one and the same. Gazan civilians pop out in jeans and a t-shirt, shoot at Israel with an AK or, you know, a mortar round or whatever. When Israel shoots them, the medics remove the rifle and they claim it's a civilian casualty because he's in jeans and a t-shirt. When Hamas wants to do a photo op when they're releasing hostages, they all suddenly put on uniforms. But when you look at the footage of them fighting in Gaza, none of them wear uniforms because they're smart. You know, at this point, they're playing the entire media scene to their advantage, and there is no distinction. So you have a Hamas unit that's you know, attacking an IDF unit. They turn and go on the run. They drop their guns, and they walk in a house. IDF follow them in. They make an arrest. Suddenly, they're claimed, you know, we're civilians, or they get shot, and suddenly, this is civilians. A lot of the hostages that Israel had recovered from Gaza were held in civilian homes, were held by civilian families, held by UNRWA teachers, by, you know, the UN relief, you know, refugee relief organization participated. Al Jazeera reporters participated to a certain extent in a lot of this. And just what we're saying is it's very difficult. That makes a war very difficult when there is no distinction between military and civilian. Locating some of these hostages has been next to impossible because it's not a clear distinction between Hamas and civilians. And so because of that, Israel has swept Gaza from north to south. They have cleared out a huge portion of Hamas. They have cleared out a huge portion of Hamas leadership. But this is a multi-generational job. You know, Israel will not slaughter 2 million Gazans, obviously. They will not do that. They should not do that. But without doing that, there is no complete end to Hamas. Hamas will always return. This is going to be a long haul for Israel. Right now, they're focusing on getting the hostages back and crippling Hamas as much as possible. You know, this will be a multi-generational effort.
We have seen the horrific way that they've returned these hostages, paraded them across a stage. It's horrific. It's incomprehensible, you know, with how they are just parading these hostages across. But you expect that. You expect that from a demonic entity like Hamas. And, you know, I'm really tired of hearing the media say innocent Gazan civilians. They are not innocent. Unfortunately, you know, they bought into the government of Hamas. They said, oh, we want this. And then they, of course, were trained from very birth to kill and hate Jews to destroy the state of Israel. So, you know, I've said this before, they are also responsible for what happened on October 7th. So, you know, where do we go from here? And our current president, Trump, he says, I want to own Gaza. I want to have that, and I want to make it the Riviera. So your thoughts on, you know, the day after, how does all this play out? And I don't believe the United States is going to own Gaza. But I'll tell you my opinion. I think Israel should get back in there in Gaza. When they were there, you know, years ago, it was blossoming and blooming.
That really is the only real answer. I think Israel has to settle Gaza again. And that won't be a quick process. Israel at this point is not going to go in and kick out you know, Gazans and form settlements. But there could be a slow process. Israel, if the U.S. does not, I mean, Trump is talking about this deal of relocating Gazans, which may or may not happen. If that does not happen, Israel will have to do some form of military occupation for several generations. I mean, that's really the only way to avoid October 7th happening all over again. Israel's going to have some level of military control over Gaza, and in order to stabilize that settlement, a settlement process will probably need to happen again at some point.
Well, let's move on to Iran right now. We know during this current conflict, Iran bombed Israel twice with over 500, you know, missiles and drones and who knows what else, and Israel survived those two attacks. And of course, before that, we know that they're the chief sponsor of terrorism in the Middle East, and they've been through proxies attacking Israel, all of that. You have recently said that there could possibly be a third attack on Israel from Iran, and you posted a video on that. What's that all about?
Iran has promised a third attack. They promised it since their last attack. When Israel retaliated for their attack in October, Iran promised that there would be another attack. So far, they have delayed. They keep pushing it off. Iran came out and said that that third attack is coming, that Iran is preparing for that third attack. What that looks like, nobody knows. But I personally think that Iran is operating out of a lot of fear right now. Before October 7th, Iran had an enormous position of power in the Middle East. They had a tremendous missile array, a long-range missile array, a fairly advanced missile defense capabilities provided by Russia. They had Hezbollah on Israel's north with literally 100,000 rockets pointed at Israel's population centers. They had Hamas in Gaza. They had a lot of cooperation from Assad in Syria, and then also their allies in Iraq and Yemen as well. Through this war, Hamas is completely crippled for the most part. Hamas is not operational in any sense of the word. Hezbollah also has been, for the most part, crippled by Israel. Their offensive capability is crippled in Lebanon, in southern Lebanon. Israel, with the pager operation, the tremendous pager operation, was able to surprise Hezbollah and take out a lot of their missile array from the air, and was able to eliminate the doomsday scenario that everyone predicted, where Hezbollah would attack and shoot 50,000 missiles into Tel Aviv. So they were able to neutralize that. And then with the fall of Assad in Syria, Israel took full advantage of that situation and destroyed most of Syria's conventional military force before HTS took over in Syria. HTS is a formidable enemy of Israel. We can get into that if you want to. But they're not friendly with Iran, not in the least bit. They hate Iran. You know, shortly after they took power, they banned Iranians from entering Syrian airspace, you know, from flying in. They kicked out the embassy. They said no cooperation between Syria and Iran going forward. So, and then after Iran's attack of Israel in October, Israel was able to eliminate one of their secret nuclear reactor sites, nuclear development sites, and they were able to neutralize a lot of their air defense capabilities and their missile production sites. Iran right now, I think, personally, is operating out of fear. What they've built, the terror infrastructure they have built in the Middle East, has been neutralized. And they have two options at this point. Either one, they can give up their dream of destroying the state of Israel and focus towards actually creating a decent country for their people to live in, or they can buckle down and go doomsday scenario, put everything they have into nuclear weapons, and you know do that final showdown with Israel. And from what we've seen of Iran, you know, I don't think the former option is what they will choose. And that's why Israel is laser focused right now and doing everything they can to make sure that Iran does not develop nuclear weapons. And I think the Trump administration is very much on board with that as well.
You know, this is what you're going to get from the Israel guys. You're going to get the truth. And I just want to encourage you to connect with the Israel guys. Go to theisraelguys.com, theisraelguys.com. They've got videos. They've got so much to offer you. They've got millions of subscribers through all their platforms. Please connect with them, theisraelguys.com, theisraelguys.com. I've got so many other questions to ask you, but we're just running out of time right now. We have a new administration, Mr. Trump. Tell me what you think.
It's hard to say, but we are looking at, I feel like, a Trump 2.0 In his first presidency, Trump did a lot of tremendous things for the state of Israel. He's always been very, very pro-Israel. I mean, from his first original campaign in 2016, he made a lot of promises to Israel. But if you noticed, if you're a longtime follower of the Israel guys, we were fairly hard on Trump, you know, in his first term, because he did a lot of good for Israel. Also, he brought a very traditional conservative worldview to his approach to Israel. He was pro two-state solution, a pro creating a Palestinian state in Judea and Samaria, Israel's biblical heartland. To a certain extent, he moved the embassy to Jerusalem. He made tremendous strides with the Abraham Accords. There was a lot there that was also dangerous. In his second term so far, Trump, I feel like personally, has recalibrated when it comes to the Middle East. And so far, he's taking a very no-nonsense approach to Hamas, to Iran, to all of Israel's enemies. Apparently, from what I've heard, it seems like before Bibi visited the White House, I heard that Trump was supposed to watch the original Israel footage of October 7th. I don't know if it happened or not. I feel like it did, because when Bibi visited the White House, I felt like we've seen a different Trump. He saw the atrocities of October 7th, the stuff that the public doesn't see. And I think it changed him. He has a very no-nonsense approach when it comes to Gaza. He realizes when you see this stuff for yourself, when you see the level of barbarity that happened, you realize Israel cannot negotiate with Hamas. They cannot negotiate a permanent ceasefire with Hamas. It will not happen. It will not work. And I think Trump sees that.
We want to wrap up the show and talk about the Israel Guys Summit that's happening in Texas. And this is coming up very, very soon in June. And you can be a part of this. And this is an exciting summit that you guys do. And this is actually the second one that you're doing. So tell us a little bit about why you guys do the Israel Summit.
The Israel Summit, we want to encourage and strengthen the people of Israel is one goal. We want Israel to see that there are thousands of Christians that support the nation of Israel, support their right to self-defense, support their right to autonomy. And by bringing everyone together in one place, we're able to send a very clear message to the state of Israel. This is who we are. This is what we believe. Also, it's an educational event. We have a lot of, you know, boots on the ground perspective of what's happening in Israel, a lot of the stuff we've talked about here today. And we have a lot of people that we know that live and work in Israel that have, you know, a whole depth of insight that I do not have, that will come and will give you, a lot that you can take, a lot that if you're there, you can take that to your friends, to your connections, and say, you know, I know people. I know people that live in Israel. I know people that know this stuff. And this is what's going on. You know, when you see the CNN headline or the Al Jazeera, the AP or whatever, you can know what the truth is.
You know, this is a summit that is unlike any other event about Israel in the nation. And I will say that because last year I was there and I left there with so much information and so much motivation. I already love Israel and the Jewish people, but I left even more excited to just take that information and to share it with others. And that's what's going to happen if you come to the Israel Summit. Now, the Israel Summit is coming up this summer, so I want you to make plans on going and being a part of this. We're talking about June 9th through the 11th, and again, an incredible array of guests. You can go to their website, theisraelguys.com. Go to theisraelguys.com, theisraelguys.com, and get all the information there. You guys are going to have thousands of people there, and they're going to get information. They're going to leave like I did last year, motivated and just like ready to go.
If you want to come, registration is filling up fast. Yeah, it's filling up quickly, so you need to register.
There is a limited amount of space. I mean, you only have so much space in the venue, and so if you want to be a part of this, you need to, I'd say, do it right now. So just go to theisraelguys.com. TheIsraelGuys.com. It is coming up this summer in Texas, June 9th through the 11th, and I hope you'll be a part of it. Ben Hilton, our guest today. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, yeah.
Well, you're hearing a lot in the news about what's happening on our college campuses with this Jew hatred that's happening against Jewish people, violence against Jewish people. And we're going to share with you a story that's actually happening right now. Some guy who actually said that said, we need to do violence against Jewish people. And in the studio with me today is Billy Davis. He's the associate editor for American Family News. Billy, tell us about the story that you guys are working on.
John, your listeners may have heard the name Mahmoud Khalil. He's the graduate student at Columbia University. He's, quote, a pro-Palestinian protester. He's 30 years old, here in the U.S. on a student visa. He's a citizen of Algeria. The Trump administration, the State Department in particular, they want him deported. They want him out of the country. Why do they want him out of here? Because he violated the terms of his visa application by praising and defending Hamas in its October 7th attack. Now, President Trump said that he and all these other anti-Semitic students have engaged in, quote, pro-terrorist, anti-Semitic, anti-American activity, unquote. John, that may not be the story your listeners have heard. They may have heard Khalil is, quote, an anti-war protester, or here's another description. He's, quote, a Palestinian activist. Well, the story this week is that he's in custody for deportation and he couldn't be with his wife when she gave birth. That's the literal headline today. I would call it a sob story, John, that he couldn't be there while his wife gave birth. Before you feel sorry for him or your listeners feel sorry for a husband who couldn't be there, don't forget that these campus protesters, like him, the mask has been pulled off. What do I mean by that? What I mean is he supports that October 7th attack in northern Israel. Don't take my word for it. 13 months ago on the campus at Columbia, he defended the, quote, armed resistance against Israel. He said that at a campus event called Palestine 101. John, let me ask you this. What did that armed resistance look like October 7th in Israel?
It was horrific. It was a disaster. We're talking about the slaughter of innocent Israelis by demonic terrorists.
Think about that. An armed resistance where you had the people that were gunned down at the concert. You had the civilians who were killed when they lobbed a grenade in the bomb shelters. You had babies, literal babies, who were killed in their cribs and then burned by Hamas terrorists. And now you have a person in our country as a guest defending that and calling that armed resistance. When your listeners hear Khalil described as a father who couldn't be there with his child or somebody who is anti-war, don't forget this man defended and praised those terrorists who slaughtered innocent families.
Billy Davis, associate editor for American Family News. You need to be careful about the news that you consume. That's why you need American Family News. Please get the app on your mobile device. Go to AFN.net. The app is available for Android and iOS devices. Get that. They're going to tell you the truth about what's happening, and you can read more about the story as well. That's the Middle East Report. I'm John Riley. Thank you for listening.